on the Vermont Sports Network. This is the Cat's Den. Now, here is your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? You're in the Cat's Den, 101.3 The Game and 1013thegame.com. All cats, all the time, 6 to 7 on Tuesdays. Appreciate you joining us. You can always get in on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. Your catamount questions, your catamount concerns across all sports. We do have a full show today going up until 7 o'clock, and then we'll see you over at the Burger Bar, remember, 7:30 until 9:30 as we do play trivia in our favorite place here in Colchester, again, at the Burger Bar. I told you a full show today, a full guest list. We'll tell you who's coming up. Maurice Joseph is going to join us in about 12 minutes from now. He is the head coach at George Washington, who the Cats will play tomorrow in men's basketball. Also, a former UVM basketball standout, helped lead the Cats to the NCAA tournament. You know him as Mojo. He is going to join us in about 12 minutes from now. Then we'll be joined by Dave Vatz. Dave Vatz is part of the media relations crew at Towson. Towson is who will host UVM on Friday in basketball. But Dave Vatz is also a former media relations guy for UAlbany. So he knows the rivalry well between the Cats and UAlbany. He knows the America East as a whole. Look forward to him joining us at about 6:30. And then about 6:40, we're going to be joined by Lawrence St. Germain, UVM skier, the senior skier, placed 14th yesterday, or this weekend rather, in the slalom at the U.S. World Cup of Skiing at Killington, the one that Michaela Schifrin won. That was Schifrin's 34th career slalom win on the World Cup circuit. Lawrence St. Germain of UVM finished 14th and also represented Canada in the Olympics in Pyeongchang this February. So she will join us at about 6:40, 6:45. First, though, look, I don't want to say I told you so, but I told you so. This team is different for UVM. Last year's team doesn't lose the game that the Cats lost on Sunday. This is a different team that's going to go through some growing pains, and we as fans have to be okay with that. Sunday's loss was not acceptable to John Becker. He told you as much. I'll play that audio for you in about 5 minutes. It was not acceptable to the senior players on this team, like an Ernie Duncan, to the veteran members of this team, like Anthony Lamb. It's not acceptable to lose a home game. It's not acceptable to lose a game to a fellow NCAA tournament team from a year ago, or a team that, well, when you made it 2 years ago, but also who made it last year when you didn't make it. Not acceptable to lose a game to another mid-major. Not acceptable to lose it to a team you were up 12 at the half against. Catamounts were up 12 at the half against Bucknell on Sunday and ended up losing by 8. That is unacceptable to everybody involved with the program, including the fans, but we have to be okay with it because this year's team is different. Okay, it's not 17-1 in the league through the playoffs. It's not 15-1 in the regular season. It's not 16-0 in the regular season. This team is not built that way. They are not that good yet. They might get there by February, but they're not on the level of last year's team. And to hold them to the same level of expectations is not fair. Look, you should expect them to win a game where they're up 12 at the half at home. You should expect that. But to think that they're just going to walk over opponents in the second half just because they're University of Vermont, that's not the case. That would have happened the last 2 years. Tre'Vell Haynes, Peyton Henson, Dre Wills 2 years ago, Cam Ward, those guys don't lose that game. This team that's trying to feel its way through its early season identity and figure out who they are, well, they have less of a margin for error than those guys did. And it showed in a 20-point turnaround on Sunday against the Bison, who are a good team and who are a good program. Again, 802-655-6672 if you want to get in on it on the Town Fair Tire text line. The reason why, to me, and you go break down the box score, why the Cats lost to Bucknell, it was really interesting. Because I look at and I say, Ernie Duncan had 20 points, Anthony Lamb had 13, Steph Smith had 10. And I've told you all along, your stars need to play like stars, and Lamb's better than 13 and Steph Smith's better than 10, but Ernie Duncan gets 20 to make up for it. And then you start looking at the rest of the lineup. Only 14 points from the bench on that Catamount team on Sunday. Who's the fourth scorer? And I thought to myself, that's the problem, right? They still don't have a fourth scorer. But you go look at Bucknell, they only got 9 bench points. So it wasn't that on Sunday, at least. UVM lost to Bucknell on Sunday for two reasons. One is turnovers. Cats had 14, Bucknell had 9. And the other, and you're starting to see it, it is maybe the biggest part of Vermont's season, is the three-point line. It's the three-point line. And just watch. Every game that the Cats win or lose this season, look and see what the disparity is in three-point shooting. And I bet you more often than not, the team that hits more threes is going to be the team that wins Vermont games. The Cats had 5 3-pointers on Sunday. Bucknell had 8. That's not a huge difference, but you know what it is? It's a 9-point difference, and what'd you lose the game by? You lost by 8. You were outshot by 9 from beyond the arc, and you lost the game by 8. And that right there might be the single biggest factor in why Vermont lost. They shouldn't have lost. They were up 12 at the half. They were 18 of 19 at the foul line, 94%. They out-rebounded Bucknell by 8. What was the separator? Turnovers, 3-point line. Game, done. That was it. It wasn't the bench scoring. It wasn't the lack of a fourth score. It wasn't rebounding. It wasn't points in the paint. It wasn't that. It was the 3-point line and turnovers. And start paying attention to UVM games this year. When they hit from beyond the arc, they're going to be very tough to beat. When they go cold and they go 5 for 20 or whatever they were on Sunday, 5 for 23, that's a problem. I think they were 5 for 20, and I think 8 for 23 was Bucknell. Neither one of them shot well. But Bucknell hit 3 more, therefore 9 more points. Therefore, you win a game by 8. You get 9 positive points from the 3-point line. That helps, and it hurts UVM. What happened in Kansas? LeGerald Vick goes 8 for 8 from 3. A game that was pretty close at the half, that Vermont led most of the first half. You end up losing by 15. Why? LeGerald Vick, 8 of 8 from 3. Big difference. You lose at Louisville. Why? You didn't shoot well. Ernie Duncan didn't play well. He's your best three-point shooter. Lost. Why'd you destroy Yale on Wednesday before Thanksgiving? Shot really well from the three-point line. Anthony Lamb hit him. Ernie Duncan hit him. You win games like that. This Vermont team is going to win games because of their ability to shoot threes, and they're going to lose games when they don't shoot the three ball well. And maybe that's the thing that I've noticed about this team anymore, or more so than any other in the 3 years now that I've been here. This team is going to be dependent on the three-point line to at least open up some other things for them. They are focusing on it. They want to hit the three. And that's something I haven't really felt in the last 2 years. I haven't felt that they were a jump-shooting team. I thought the last 2 years, Trayvell Haynes is going to drive in the lane, he's going to kick out, and he's going to find the open shot wherever that is. This team, I think they're looking for the three. And that seems to be a bit of a difference. Unnamed texter, also a bunch of missed layups on Sunday. Way too many. Cats didn't shoot well from the floor. And John Becker, he wasn't happy about it. This was him to NBC5 and the rest of the media yesterday. This was him. This was from our buddy Ken Drake at NBC5, but it went to the whole media.
I mean, it's not going to be fun around here, for sure. Yeah, losing's not acceptable, and to play like that's not acceptable, and you're either going to get on board with what we're doing, or we're going to try some other guys.
I had a texter ask me and say, Brady, do you think that is directed at any one player? And no, I don't. I don't believe that John Becker's calling out his team or any individual member on his team 6 games into the season. I don't believe he's wired that way. I think he understands the patience that needs to be had with this team. But I do believe that he's got to make sure, he's trying to make sure that his team understands the expectations in this program. And he understands that you can't just waltz onto the court and think other teams are going to fold just because Vermont's had success. Bucknell's won the Patriot League the last 3 years, I believe. They only lost to Michigan State last year by 4 in the first round. Okay, a Michigan State team that's always in the Elite Eight, always in the Final Four, Bucknell lost to them by 4 in the first round. And John Becker is trying to impart that message to his team to say, look, you can't just step on the court and think other teams are going to wilt. And you need to understand that. And if you don't, then I'll go to other guys. Okay? This team, we know 3 things are going to stay constant on this team. Anthony Lamb, Ernie Duncan, Steph Smith. They're playing a lot. Beyond that, who else really is there right now to step up? Really. I mean, Everett Duncan's a starter. He's going to stay a starter. The Rob Petty, Ryan Davis battle for the big man, maybe, but neither one of them score a lot. Sammy Dingba plays good defense, doesn't score a lot. Isaiah Maul's the only other guy who maybe can work himself into that role through the course of the year, and it's possible that he will. But as a freshman 6 games in, 2 inconsistent. 12 points one game, 2 the next. So we'll have to see, but Catamounts, I bet it wasn't a happy Monday practice, happy early practice today for them based on that loss to Bucknell. A tough loss, plenty of time to regroup, though. They're going to have 2 winnable games this week here. George Washington tomorrow. The Colonials are 1-5, and Towson on Friday, who's 2-4. So Cats have a chance to get back to some winning ways on the road nonetheless. before we start seeing them back home again here. They're going to take on George Mason on Monday, so they got a three-game road swing coming up here down to the D.C. area. We mentioned the Colonials of George Washington are 1-5. A lot of us feel bad because of that. I mean, we want UVM to win, but we like the guy who's at the helm of George Washington. It's former Catamount Maurice Joseph. He helped lead the Cats to an NCAA tournament in his time here in Burlington, and he's going to join us next in the Cats Den on 101.3 The Game. 101.3 The Game. Welcome back. You're in the Cats Den right here on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. We are your home for Catamount basketball. Cats back in action on the hardwood tomorrow night. We have the coverage for you at 6:30 as they go down to Washington, D.C. to take on George Washington out of the Atlantic 10. And when they take on the Colonials, there's going to be a familiar face on the opposite sideline. The head coach of George Washington is a former Catamount standout, Maurice Joseph. Mojo with us here on the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Maurice, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate you joining us. You guys taking on the Cats tomorrow. Going to be a pretty good game for both teams, a good early season out-of-conference test. What's it like coaching against your alma mater?
I think it'll be fun. You know, it's a program that I obviously I'm very close to. I follow very closely, and I cheer for the players a lot. And I have some fellow UVM alums here in the D.C. area. Sometimes we get together and watch games whenever we can. So it'll be fun. Be a little bit of mixed emotions, I guess, but you know, when it's all said and done, when the ball goes up, I know Coach Becker will have his team ready to play, and I'll have mine ready to play, so it's going to be a fun contest.
I want to take a trip down memory lane. You helped lead the Catamounts to an America East Championship, to a NCAA tournament game. You guys lost to Syracuse, but, I mean, what brought you to UVM? Because you actually transferred in from Michigan State, so why leave a program that was that good to come to Vermont? What was the decision-making?
A number of reasons. You know, one, the proximity to home. I was born and raised in Montreal, Quebec, so you know, Montreal being an hour and a half away, hour 40 minutes away from Burlington was a huge deal for me, being so close to my family, but also the winning tradition that Vermont has shown at that time in recent years, and the ability to come in and help a program who was doing really well continue that trend and be a part of that legacy and tradition. So a mixture of being closer to home, a mixture of the winning and the personnel on that team at the time. We talk about Mike Trimboli and Marcus Blakely and Evan Fiel. We had some pretty good players back then, and so I thought I got a great opportunity to play close to home, but also play for a winning program who had a chance to do some special things.
I was going to ask you about Mike Trimboli at the end of the interview, but since you mentioned his name, I'm going to bring him up now. He has become a friend of the show. He and I played against each other in the Burlington Y League, and he scored 54 on us. I'll have you know that. He took no prisoners at the Burlington Y.
But he's also one
of our 54-year-old co-hosts on our 3-6 show has decided to take Trimboli to task and say he could beat him one-on-one. And Trimboli says, I will play you anytime, anywhere, and beat you 21-0. How good was Trimboli back in the day?
He was a tremendous college basketball player. He can really shoot it, really high IQ guy, really tough. You know, what he lacked in athleticism and agility and quickness and all that kind of stuff, he made up for in heart with an incredible competitive spirit and competitive motor. Tremendously skilled, but he was a great guard because of his never die, never quit attitude. You know what I mean? He was an unbelievable competitor and one of the greatest to ever put on a UVM uniform. So he's a guy that's one of my closest friends. He came out to Connecticut to watch my team play over in the Mohegan Sun last week over Thanksgiving. And then, he's a great friend, great supporter. Love that guy to death, man. One of my favorite teammates of all time.
Maurice Joseph joining us here in the Cats Den 101.3 The Game. He's the head coach at George Washington. Catamounts are going to take on George Washington tomorrow night. We'll have the coverage for you at 6:30. Maurice Joseph, a guy who played for UVM. I'm sure you've heard the news by now that the Catamounts are going to be getting a new gym, a new building in 2 years. What does it mean to you as an alum to see Patrick Jim go?
Well, I think for any alum that leaves the program, you like to see it progress. You like it to see it go to new heights. And you know, what Coach Becker has done has been tremendous in continuing a streak of unbelievable teams and unbelievable success. And the fact that they're going to have that new facility now, I'm not sure when it's going to be finished, but I think it's going to take the program to new heights. You know, they've seen a great deal of success on the floor, obviously, as we all know, but the new facility will enhance the recruiting. It'll enhance the in-game experience. It'll enhance the fanfare, and it'll enhance a lot of things across the board. So to see the program heading where it is with the facility upgrades, with the talent that they have on the team, it feels good as a men's basketball alum to see where the program is headed.
Everyone talks about the environment at Patrick Gym. As somebody who played there for 2 years and helped take the team to a conference title and helped take the team to an NCAA tournament, what was it like in that NCAA tournament season for you? What was Patrick Gym like on those game days?
Well, I was telling my staff this. UVM has one of the most loyal and consistent fan bases out there, and I sincerely mean that. You know, I'm watching film of this year's team, obviously in preparation for our game, and watching the Yale and the Bucknell games, and I'm looking into the stands, you know, when the camera pans into the bench, and you see the same faces that were there when I played. You know, I see Frank right behind the bench, and I see the Saplickies in the upper left side, and I see Barry Stone along the baseline there. So just all the same faces that were there that supported myself and my team when I played are still there cheering and supporting those guys. So that place is special. You know, I think it has a unique charm. I hope that the new facility can maintain some of that. But it's a special fan base, special place, and I actually look forward to coming back there to play next year.
Yeah, how did these games get set up? So this is a one-and-one deal, it looks like, where they're going to play down at your place this year and you're going to play up here next year. How do these things get set up? Do you call Coach Becker? Does he call you? How does that work?
Well, we had been talking about it for a couple of years when I got the job, and you know the scheduling piece just didn't match up for the first couple of years, but it's something that I wanted to do. To me, you know, a kid growing up in Montreal, Quebec, with dreams of becoming an NBA player, then getting into high school and college, and then dreams of becoming a college basketball head coach, you know, realizing that obviously at a young age, and then to play your alma mater and to set the game up is a dream come true. But, you know, Coach Becker and I spoke about it for a couple years, and then, you know, the scheduling worked out for him and for us in terms of pockets of dates that we had in our schedules to be able to make it work. So, no, we were looking at dates for a while. It finally worked out. Now we signed a home and home deal, so they'll come to us obviously tomorrow. We'll come to them at some point. Not sure when it'll be yet in our non conference schedule next year. But again, looking forward to just getting back up there to Burlington and seeing some familiar faces and bringing my team to my alma mater and competing and hopefully getting a win down there.
Outside of basketball next year, when you come back to Burlington, what's the first thing you got to do? Is it a restaurant you got to hit up? Is it someone you got to see? What's the first thing when you come back to Burlington outside of basketball?
Well, the first thing I always do is I go see some of my friends. I've you know, made and maintained some great relationships over the years with some people in Burlington. So that's the first thing I do. But in terms of restaurants, I'm you know, it's American Flatbread is always a go-to. You know, it's I love a spot on the dock. I took my wife there last summer. We visited Burlington. I took my wife there. That new spot wasn't there when I was around, luckily, because we probably would have spent too much time there. But that's a great restaurant, great spot, unbelievable ambiance. So, you know, it's for me when I go visit, not just so much about the you know, going to visit a particular restaurant, it's really seeing the people that I've come to love and you know, maintain relationships with, whether it be Trimboli or you know, former teammates Ryan Shields and Colin McIntosh, and those guys are still around, and are stopping in the gym and seeing the UVM staff and Coach Becker, and you know, Kyle Saplicki, obviously on staff, was another one of my favorite teammates. So just tremendous people, tremendous relationships. So that's what it's more so about for me, is going back and see the people who really impacted my life in my time there.
Maurice Joseph, he's the head coach at George Washington. They're going to take on the Catamounts tomorrow. We'll have the coverage for you at 6:30 right here on 101.3 The Game. Also played at UVM and helped lead the Cats to an NCAA tournament. Maurice, I want to ask you this. When you got the job at GW 3 years ago, you were the youngest head coach in a top 10 RPI conference. How did you know you were ready to be a head coach at such a young age?
Well, I didn't. That's the short answer. You really don't know until you go through it. There's certain experiences that you just have to experience as a head coach to gain that, you know, to gain that knowledge and gain that experience. But what I did as an assistant coach was I on almost on a daily basis continued to build my philosophy and build my, you know, my binder is what I call it, in terms of how I would play X's and O's defensively and offensively, how I'd, you know, where and how I would recruit, how I'd handle academics, what kind of staff I'd hire. I spent a great deal of time, you know, 5 years almost, you know, every day, every other day, adding, whether it be videos and clips of sets and, you know, defensive schemes, or whether it be articles from coaches or whatever have you. I was kind of added to my binder on a daily basis. And when I got the job, I really just opened up the binder and said, hey, this is what I've been saying I was going to do from day one. Let's run the program this way, you know. And then it's worked out. And I'm incredibly fortunate to be here and to be the head coach of these young men at this great university. And I look forward to continuing to build this program with the kids that I have here, because we do have some really high character kids. A young team right now, but a team that's eager to learn, eager to work, and eager to build for the future. So really, really excited and really fortunate and humbled to be in the position that I'm in now.
You played professionally. You played over in Israel, really high-level basketball in Israel. I've talked with a lot of people that go and play overseas, and they say, look, the opportunity to make real money is there. I mean, there can be some lucrative money made overseas. Why did you decide to come back and get into coaching rather than continue to play professionally, where life can be pretty good?
Yeah, well, I retired reluctantly, but I knew I wanted to coach. And you know, the coaching industry, the coaching business, you got to work your way up, and you know you got to be able to get your feet in the door and then prove your worth and build your resume up. And I wanted to do that at an earlier age rather than later. You know, it's tough to get back into coaching after playing for, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, whatever it might be, then come back and work your way up in the coaching ranks. So I knew I wanted to coach. I wanted to play professionally because I realized that dream, and it was a great year for me, and played over in Israel, some great competition, great experience, great opportunity to live in another country, another culture. But ultimately, I knew I wanted to coach. I wanted to become a head coach. I actually found out, I realized that when I transferred to Vermont about my junior year. And I was fortunate to be able to get my feet in the door, and you know, the rest is history. So, again, just really humbled and fortunate to be in the position that I'm in now.
Maurice, I'll get you out of here on this. A fun note that will sound an awful lot like Mike Trimboli to you, but I asked him a couple weeks ago, and I said, hey, if you walk into the UVM gym today and you play Ernie Duncan one-on-one, who wins? He said he would win, no doubt about it. If you're a young guy, if you step on the court with your team at GW in practice, are you taking the guys to task?
Yeah, I still have some juice left. I don't have a lot of juice, but I still got some left. So my big thing is I'm incredibly energetic with our guys, and I jump in there, and I like to be in the trenches in there with them. I think it adds an extra boost of energy to practice when they see me out there. My guys think I'm washed up, and when I tell them I could shoot or I could play, whatever it is, they're reluctant to believe me. But you know, it's part of it, man. It's great just being around our guys and mixing up with them and getting into trenches with them. And I'm not surprised that Trimboli would say that. He'll probably be a guy who will challenge guys one-on-one when he's 50 years old and firmly believe that he can win. That's just, again, part of his competitive nature. And I'm not sure if he could beat Ernie Duncan. I've been watching Ernie on film the last few days, and I think Ernie might have him at this point. But, again, Trimboli's going to believe he's going to beat anyone one-on-one. But that's part of who he is, man. He's the ultimate competitor.
Maurice Joseph, UVM graduate, UVM alum, helped lead the Catamounts to an NCAA tournament in his time in Burlington. Now the head coach at George Washington. We're going to see the Colonials tomorrow, 6:30. We'll have the coverage for you. Maurice, everybody here in Burlington is rooting for the Cats, but everybody here wishing you good luck as well. Hope for a good game tomorrow, and wish the Colonials nothing but success the rest of the way.
Awesome. I appreciate that, man. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely. There he goes, Maurice Joseph. A really good interview. I've talked to him once before, right after he got the job at George Washington, at this point now, 2.5 years ago or so. It was great with his time then, gracious again today. And whenever we've posted about Maurice Joseph on our Facebook page or on our social media channels, a lot of people with a lot of positive memories and nothing but a great response towards Maurice Joseph. Town Fair Tire text line open 802-655-6672. I love what he had to say about keeping a notebook. One of my favorite anecdotes of that interview was probably something that might not even register with a lot of our listeners. He said, I kept a notebook of things, of drills, of philosophies, of recruiting. And that was the first thing I was told when I got into coaching was keep a notebook. Whatever you see that you like, whatever you hear that you like, jot it down. Have a coaching philosophy. Update it. Think about recruiting. Think about how you would do it. You know, I was looking at my notebook yesterday because we pulled it out of the closet. We're doing some cleaning. I looked at it yesterday, and it was, hey, here's my coaching philosophy. Here's my recruiting philosophy. Here's our profile of a player at our university. Here's the qualities we're looking for. Here are our team goals. And those are the things that I did over just a year, and he did it over 5 years, and you start to see then that's how a young guy can get an Atlantic 10 job at a young age. I mean, as you said, the youngest coach in a top 10 RPI conference. Very, very impressive. Look, we're rooting for the Cats tomorrow, but nothing but success to Maurice Joseph and the Colonials. I used to have a friend on the Colonials coaching staff as well, Carmen Massarello, who's joined, you know, now at the time, Champlain Valley Game Night. He is now the assistant coach at Siena, but he is from Albany, just like I am. So when GW was winning the NCAA or the NIT championship now like 4 years ago or so, I used to have Carmen on. So I've been following GW for a while. Nothing but success to them hoping for success for them. They're 1-5 right now. We're hoping to be able to get 1-6 tomorrow as we want the Cats to win. But Maurice Joseph, one of the good ones. If you have memories of Mojo, you can get him on in. And speaking of memories, UVM is going to play Towson on Friday. And one of the members of the athletic department at Towson has some real specific memories of UVM because he used to work in the America East. We'll talk to Dave Vatz of the Towson Athletic Department next. You won't want to miss some of his stories because I got some questions for him about things he's seen in the America East and with the Cats specifically. That's next on the Cats 10, 101.3 The Game. Welcome back. You're in the Cats 10 right here on 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. Every Tuesday, 6 to 7, all things Catamounts from all angles. UVM hoops back on the air tomorrow as the Cats go down south towards the D.C. area to take on George Washington. We'll have the coverage for you at 6:30. They're also going to take on Towson on Friday, so a two-game week for the Cats. Let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and talk with Dave Vatz, who works at Towson on their media relations staff, but spent the last number of years working at UAlbany. So, Dave, thanks for joining us. You have seen the America East firsthand for a lot of years. What are your memories of the America East as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, the America East always had great rivalries, and you know, they always have passionate fan bases. And you know, I watched a lot of Vermont-UAlbany games, and they were always great games with great fans all around them, and you could feel the tension in the arenas every time that those two teams played. And the thing I remember most is just the great competition and seeing just how passionate everybody was involved. You know, whether you were a fan, whether you were a player, a coach, you know, or somebody watching on TV, everybody just watched that game with great anticipation and great tension. And you can point to so many different great rivalries in this league, you know, being the Northeast. You know, you can point to Stony Brook Albany, you can point to New Hampshire Maine, you can point to, you know, Albany Vermont. And I think there's even ones that are continuing to grow as some of these games get better. And just I think that the league always had these great rivalries, these great games. You can see with the conference, too, that they've got some teams that compete on the national level, which a lot of mid-majors would love to have in their ranks.
I want to take you around the league and around the sports that you saw, but I also want to ask you this question, because you saw two of the better games in recent America East history, and I happen to be at both of them also. Now I don't even remember what year it was, but it was conference championship men's basketball. Peter Hooley hits the game-winning shot against Stony Brook. You also were here in Patrick Gym the day that UAlbany blows the 10-point lead to Vermont, and Vermont ends up winning. That was 2 years ago to get to the NCAA tournament. What was the better game? What was it like in the gym for both of those experiences?
Yeah, it was very interesting. And obviously, being a part of the UAlbany staff, you know, I got both ends of the spectrum. You know, I got for the one with the Stony Brook game. You know, you had the UAlbany crowd there, and you had the the thrill of victory with one of the greatest moments you'll ever see in any basketball game, not just in the America East. And then, of course, in Vermont, you know, the big comeback by the Catamounts. And what I remember about that game was that, for one, UAlbany had to upset Stony Brook to get there.
Yeah.
And it was a pretty back-and-forth game. UAlbany takes the lead. And then what I remember is Vermont just constantly on the fast-break attack, just constantly getting the ball, Trey Bell Haynes, and just going to the basket as quickly as possible. And, you know, the crowd was getting nervous, too. You know, but every time out, they would come alive, cheer, and it wasn't a seat in the stands you could get to. I remember sitting in my seat next to the UAlbany bench, and I couldn't move at any point in time during the game, even during the breaks, even during when there's action in play. I couldn't move. I had to stay where I was. And with Peter Hooley's shot, people don't remember, UAlbany was down 9 points, about a minute 30 to go. Everybody thought Stony Brook was going to get their first title, and there was every reason to think that. And they had a very deep team, including Warney in the paint. And UAlbany just put their press into attack mode. And even with that, they missed one of their final second shots. And then Sanders managed to knock the ball back and get the ball to Peter Pooley, and he just put it up and knocked it down. And you couldn't hear yourself think in that gym at any point after that shot for probably about 5 minutes. And it was just, you feel surreal in that moment, especially with what happened with Peter Hooley's mom. And it feels surreal with you when you see that shot.
Yeah, both games were unbelievable to be at in person. And I happened to be on the winning side of both of those because I worked at UAlbany at the time with the Peter Hooley shot. And I worked here at the time of the UVM comeback. And then on the other end, I was there last year in the building when Jarris Lyles hit the shot to beat UVM to go to the NCAA tournament. So really there have been some incredible moments in America East Conference basketball championship history. And we're talking with Dave Vatz here in the Cat's Den. And Dave, I wanted to ask you about this because you mentioned the environment at Patrick Gym that day when you were here when UVM did beat Albany. Well, UVM is going to get a new basketball arena. It's going to be open hopefully in two seasons from now. And a lot of people have said, well, Patrick Gym plays like a glorified high school gym. It doesn't look all that great. But people do love the environment. So what is it like? Because someone who's been around all around the country and been all around the mid-major circuit, where does Patrick Gym kind of fit in, kind of the ambiance, kind of the environment?
So from an environment standpoint, I can tell you that that is one of the loudest gyms you'll ever be around, you know, because all the fans, you don't see an open seat in the gym. So basically, it's going to be loud. It's going to be hard to think in there. It's hard to get around in there. So you know when you enter in there, you're going into an environment that's very pro-Vermont. And I think that's something that you really underestimate when you leave the area because you're not going to have just something like that. I mean, the only other place I can compare it to is also somebody else in the America East is Stony Brook. When that gym gets full because your fans are all around you, it's kind of a small place, and they're going to get loud pretty quickly, and kind of how the arena is set up, the sound can get pretty loud, especially with that band on the side. So with all of that, you know, it's a really hard place to play. I remember when UAlbany was preparing for the conference championship in 2017, they would actually pump sound into the Sepke Arena. So they were playing it on the loudspeakers just to try to simulate something. And it was very hard to think in the Sepke Arena when they were simulating that. But it's hard to simulate the fans with that. I mean, I can tell you that from a fan standpoint, there are a lot of mid-majors that would love to have what Vermont has. At the same time, though, I think that a lot of mid-majors are going to the more modern arenas. You really like seeing the scoreboard. You like kind of being able to walk around the arena and kind of have, you know, enjoy your time. When you go to a basketball game, you kind of take a lot out of your day out of it. So you want to be able to have a good meal. You want to be able to enjoy yourself and have some good parking around the area. So, you know, I understand what Vermont is losing when they move to a new gym, and definitely Patrick Gymnasium is one of the hardest places to play in all of mid-major basketball. But it would very much help, I think, to have a new arena and kind of have that modern look that a lot of teams are going for these days.
How has the America East grown as a whole from your time in it? Now you're working at Towson, and we'll see the Catamounts in Towson on Friday. But how did the America East grow in your time there? You mentioned some of the teams gaining national relevance. UAlbany lacrosse, very, very good, has made a Final Four. The men's soccer put, I think, three teams in the NCAA tournament a few years ago and had three teams ranked. I mean, pretty unbelievable stuff for the league as a whole.
You can add that UMBC was in the College Cup a couple years ago, and UAlbany in men's soccer was in the Final 16. I mean, as a men's soccer program, they're probably the best mid-major conference there is. There was one point where they were actually third in RPI among all conferences in the country. I think one and two were the ACC and the Big East. So they have been very powerful. I mean, you can just look at the past couple of years and see all the teams that have been to just how far they have gone. I mean, the Stony Brook women's lacrosse was number one in the country for most of last season and lost by an overtime goal to one of the finalists in the NCAA championship. UAlbany men's lacrosse goes to the Final Four. UMBC pulls off an upset of the ages that is going to be shown in any NCAA tournament men's basketball coverage for the next 30 years. Anytime they mention a 1-16, they're going to say the name UMBC. And also UAlbany field hockey went to a Final Four. I mean, all of these different teams around the conference, and UMass Lowell, their hockey extra, I believe they went to a championship game in hockey as well. So all of these different programs have had a team that has been very successful, and I challenge any mid-major conference around the country, kind of look at your different schools and see, have they had a team like that? And all these different teams in the America East have had some team that have been far in the NCAA tournament, that have been something that have been huge on a national scale. I mean, Vermont had that team as well when they went undefeated in 2017, and they were challenging the NCAA tournament. They got a lot of national attention because everybody believed that they would be one of those hard outs in the NCAA tournament. It's been so great for the America East with all of their all these different teams making runs in NCAA tournaments, and a lot of conferences would love to have that success.
Dave Vatz joining us here on the Cats Den, 101.3 The Game and 101.3thegame.com. Dave works in the media relations department at Towson. Formerly, you worked at UAlbany, so we've seen a lot of Vermont. Vermont's going to see Towson on Friday night. We'll have the coverage for you at 6:30 with the pregame show. Dave, Towson's going to come into that matchup at 2-4. What are we going to see from that matchup on Friday? What kind of team is Towson?
So Towson's a pretty new squad, so they got a lot of new players. They actually only returned three people that had legitimate playing time from last season. So they were one of those. They're one of those teams that is still kind of rebuilding. They had a very nice win last Sunday against Loyola. They were down by 7 a little bit in the second half, and they eventually won by 16. Very aggressive. They're defensively pretty sound, and they attack the glass pretty well. You know, the one thing they're working on is trying to find their rhythm, trying to get their shooters in rhythm. Still kind of tinkering with some of the lineups. They've had consistent starters. They're playing a lot of players right now. There's actually nobody on this team that averages more than 26 minutes a game. So Brian Fobbs is turning out some pretty good numbers. He's a nice shooter. Kind of can go all around the arc. He's averaging 12 points a game. Nike Saunders is actually shooting 70%. If he can actually stay out of foul trouble, he's going to be a forward transfer out of Duquesne. It's going to be really good for this team. So, you know, Vermont's going to go against a team that they probably haven't seen much film on, because, again, they've only been playing together for about 6 games. But they're a team that's aggressive, they're hungry, and I think they're going to get a lot better as the season goes along. Maybe they're not there just yet, but they're going to get a lot better come the rest of the season. I think it'll be a good test for Vermont.
Catamounts will take on Towson. That game will be Friday night. They're going to take on George Washington first, though. We're going to have that game for you tomorrow. Dave Vatz of the Towson Athletic Department. Dave, we appreciate the time, appreciate the perspective and the memories on the America East.
Yeah, it was great to reminisce, Brady. Hope all is well in Burlington.
All is well in Burlington. Dave, again, we appreciate the time. A lot of fun thinking back. And yeah, it's hard to believe. I have been in the gym for all three of those classic games. The Peter Hooley shot against Stony Brook was unbelievable. He referenced Peter Hooley's mom, who died earlier that season. He left the team for a month to go back to Australia and take care of his family. Came back to UAlbany, hit that improbable shot. Then the next year, or maybe not the next year, but my first year here, we see Vermont come back from double digits down in the second half to beat Albany. And then last year, unfortunately, Jairus Lyles. A lot of good games in the America East. Some other good memories for Vermont came this weekend when Lawrence St. Germain of the UVM ski team was at Killington in the World Cup of Skiing, finished 14th in the slalom. She's going to join us next on the Cats Den on 101.3 The Game.
Catamount questions in now at 802-655-6672 on the Town Fair Tire text line. It's the Cat's Den with Brady Farkas on 101.3 The Game at 1013thegame.com.
Welcome back. It's the Cat's Den right here on 101.3 The Game and 1013thegame.com. Yesterday in the huddle, we told you about Michaela Schifrin competing in the World Cup of Skiing over at Killington, about an hour and a half away from here. She won the slalom in that event, her third consecutive year winning. Well, she's not the only athlete with local ties. Remember, she went to Burke Mountain Academy for high school. Not the only athlete with local ties to have a strong showing at the World Cup of Skiing. How about UVM senior Lawrence St. Germain? She finished 14th in the slalom, also finished in the same spot last year in the slalom at Killington in the World Cup. Well, she joins us now in the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Lawrence St. Germain, thanks for being with us. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Congratulations on your great finish, 14th overall. What is it like when you're at the top of the mountain going down at those speeds? I'm like scared even just thinking about asking you the question.
Actually, slalom is the slowest event, so I can't even imagine going that fast in the downhill in Super G. I stick with slalom. It's a bit slower, but it's still pretty fast, I guess.
Well, considering I can't even stand up on the skis, everything seems fast to me. So you finished 14th overall. What do you think of your overall performance?
I'm pretty happy, especially my first run. I think I skied really well because the conditions were really, really hard. It was snowing and raining at the same time and foggy. So the course was actually pretty rough. There was a lot of ruts after because I went down 25th. So after 25 girls going before, for sure there's a lot of tracks on the course. And I think I skied really well and came down in 15th after first run, so I was really happy with that. And then second run, I was maybe a bit nervous because it was my best result after first run. So, I think I skied really well, and I'm really happy to do the same thing as last year and skied well in front of all my fans.
Yeah, what was it like? You're from Quebec and you go to school at UVM, and this event was at Killington, just an hour and a half away from where we sit right now. What was it like for you to have a relative home race in front of family and friends of a high magnitude?
It's so special because we race mainly in Europe for the World Cup. So my parents and my family and friends are not able to come that often. So it's really good to have them at the bottom and then see everyone that I race on the college circuit too. Having some college athletes also forerun for the race. It's just so fun to have familiar faces at the race because normally you don't know anyone, especially like Canada and the U.S. except Michaela, we're usually kind of a underdogs country because skiing is such a European sport, but it's so fun to have everyone there, and then the crowd in Killington, the best on the circuit for sure. Everyone cheers for everyone. It's just amazing.
We talk about football being a game of inches. We talk about baseball being a game of inches. But I have to imagine skiing is the exact same way, if not more. I mean, I mentioned Michaela Schifrin finishes first. You finish 14th, and there's barely a four-second difference even between first and 14th. So what kind of things do you do to try to make up every little bit of ground that you can? Because 4 seconds isn't a whole lot.
Yeah, no, it goes by really fast. Like this one run is about 53 seconds, I think it was in Killington. So every little mistake counts. That's why when it's rough condition like that, you just have to be ready to, you don't expect to feel good going down. And for sure, every little mistake, like I said, it's just, you try to go as fast as possible each gate because it's about 1 second each turn. So each turn count, it's a sprint, especially in slalom. So,
Lawrence St. Germain joining us here on the Cat's Den. UVM senior, just competed at the World Cup of Skiing at Killington, but also earlier this year competed in the Olympics representing Canada in Pyeongchang, finished 15th in the slalom there. What was the Olympic experience like for you? I can only imagine.
Oh, it was pretty insane going from the college circuit to the Olympics. Is great, but actually I thought it was pretty similar to NCAA championship because we race for our country and kind of the same feeling as racing as for your team at NCAA. So I thought I was like really prepared for that, and it was really nice already having the feeling of racing for a team because normally skiing is always individual. But just the atmosphere there and meeting other countries and seeing other events that we usually don't see. Like I have never been to short track speed skating event or ice figure skating. So it was just great to cheer for all Canadians and seeing other fellow UVM there also.
Do you have goals of competing in 2022 in the Olympics also?
Yeah, for sure. Hopefully come back with a medal this time. That'd be great.
Now, how does it work? What's kind of the path of a skier? Now, you are 24 years old, which is, I would say, slightly older than a traditional college senior. Did you have to take time off to pursue skiing? How does that work for someone who wants to pursue skiing at the level that you do?
For sure, with school, it's pretty hard, but everyone starts pretty young. Like, I started skiing when I was 3 years old, so I've been skiing for a while. But for sure, after high school, it's hard to, if you don't do college, especially in Canada, we don't have a competitive circuit as you have in the U.S., so that's why I think a lot of Canadians come down to the U.S. to keep racing. And I think you just have to, it's such a hard sport to practice. Like, you have to ski to practice, so for sure it demands a lot of traveling, especially for us in North America, and just working hard. And
Lawrence, I got to ask you this because I'm kind of naive about skiing. I mean, I think about baseball, I think about basketball, I think about football, I think about playing in summer leagues and in sports and winter leagues and other sports, and I'd go home from school in summer, I'd be able to play baseball on a travel team. How hard is it for you to just ski all the time and train when weather isn't always conducive to that?
I think it's mostly the amount of traveling we have to do because we have to be looking for snow all the time. So even in the fall, since here we can really ski before, only in Killington you can ski at the end of October, but the first World Cup is actually in GS at the end of October, so we have to look for snow all summer, all fall, And so I think that's the big difference, because basketball and football, you can basically practice anywhere, but we need a slope, we need different slopes, we need to practice on ice, on soft snow, on different terrain, so it's just, you have to move so much to find a mountain, so for sure it's a big challenge.
Lauren St. Germain, she's a senior on the UVM ski team, just finished 14th in the slalom at the World Cup in Killington, 15th in the same event at the Olympics in Pyeongchang. Also was the runner-up last year in the slalom at the NCAA Championships. Lawrence, we appreciate the time. Continued success. We're rooting for you to take home an NCAA Championship this year, and we'll count. We'll see you in the Olympics in 2022.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right, there she goes. Lawrence St. Germain joining us here in the Cats. And the producers are yelling at me. I've gone way over the time. Thanks to Maurice Joseph, Dave Vatz, Lawrence St. Germain. Full podcast will be available online as soon as the show ends here in about 20 seconds or so. So we'll get the podcast up. Burger Bar tonight, 7:30 to 9:30. Stay safe. Remember, $2 Otter Creek cans, $3 Otter Creek bottles. We'll see you tomorrow again for the huddle, everybody, at 3 o'clock. It is the Cats Den on 101.3 The Game.